Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for all of you today. My guest will be Patrick O'Neill. He is the founder and CEO of Amp Your Good, which is an awesome organization that is bringing healthy food to food pantries, and we'll tell you more about that and the work that he's doing in just a little bit. But first, I want to share some things that are in the news that you want to know about and some events going on, and of course, share this week's recipe with you. So first, in the news, we all have been hearing about the Farm Bill. We know the Farm Bill is being negotiated both in the Senate and in the House, and all the time, as someone who cares about organics and transparency in our food system, trying to get provisions into the Farm Bill that will protect us and let us know what's really going on is really crucial. And so there's a lot of programs that are in the Farm Bill that we're really trying to protect. The National Organic Standards Board, we're trying to get funding so that they are not nixed. Also protection for farmers. There's an initiative for organic data that's getting negotiated. Also the National Organic Certification Cost Share Program, which provides funding to offset the cost of organic certification for small farmers. Lots of really important things. Check out NOFA New York. They have a whole article on the Farm Bill and what it means and what is at stake here. I also have quite a bit on my website, too, at iegreen.com. So the Farm Bill, it gets renegotiated every 5 years. What's at stake, of course, is also the SNAP program, which is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and that's really crucial to bring food to so many people that are in need. It's scary, when it's summertime, so many of us who have plenty of food don't realize, but so many children depend every day on the school meals. They are given breakfast at school, they're given lunch at school, and after school programs have snacks, and some even have an early dinner. But when summer hits, all of a sudden these kids don't have food. There are summer programs for food, but people have to know about it. And so often the kids that are hungry are disenfranchised and don't have parent advocates or foster parent advocates or people looking out for them to sign them up and find these summer programs for them. So getting food to kids is just so important, and part of the Farm Bill supports that supplemental income for so many needy families. Majority are women, infants, children, and the elderly. So we really need to protect that. Also, there's a petition on my website to try to encourage Trader Joe's, which is a wonderful grocer, to say no to palm oil. Palm oil is responsible for so much deforestation around the globe, and we find palm oil in so many of the Trader Joe products, and being that they are a conscious retailer and one that is really trying to promote good environmental stewardship of the environment and good practices, they could do better. So there's a petition on my website to try to encourage them to do that. Also, the Union of Concerned Scientists came out with this awesome scorecard that you will want to know about. If you go to their website, the Union of Concerned Scientists, it's a scorecard that ranks states from farm to fork. And it's a very clear analysis looking at the sustainability of farms, their diet-related, and their investments in food infrastructure and more. And so it's a great scorecard. I will share it next week on my website. It came out too late for my newsletter this week, but it is really awesome. Check out how things are looking in your state and where you want to get your food from. It's really great. So some things that are going on around the city that you may want to take part of. Well, first I want to just tell you, ongoing, there's a great Artists on Climate Change exhibit going on up at Storm King Art Center. It's going on now through November 11th, so you have time to catch it. But it's a unique art exhibit exploring climbing temperatures, rising sea levels, changing weather, and the impacts that climate change will have on our lives. And so there's 17 contemporary artists that are exhibiting. And NRDC, the National Resource Defense Council, has an artist in residence, Jenny Kendler, who has a piece up there, and they are helping to sponsor this art show. So it's up at Storm King, which is in Cornwall, New York. If you've never been there, it's worth it. Even their regular exhibit is just wonderful. We used to go there all the time when I was in high school and then continued as an adult, and I bring my kids there. And it's really just a beautiful, beautiful estate filled with sculptures. So check that out. Tonight, Mark Bittman is at the Bedford Playhouse, believe it or not. They are screening selections of a new documentary that will be coming out called Right to Harm. And this evening up at the Bedford Playhouse will include the executive producer and the food author, and it should be a really great event. So if you're interested, go to the Bedford Playhouse tonight. You can go online and purchase the tickets. Just go to their website. Also, tomorrow, there's a couple things going on. There's a food truck rodeo at Crossroads Farm, which is one of the few remaining organic farms in Nassau County. It's in Malvern, and the last one, they were rained out. Hopefully, tomorrow's supposed to be beautiful weather, so we're good. It's from 5 to 9. It's a family event. There's games, and there's food trucks, there's wine and craft beer, live music. It should be really fun. So if you can come out and support them, they really need all of our support to keep going. Also, tomorrow evening, there's Brews and Bees at the Old Westbury Gardens. Old Westbury Gardens is one of the Gold Coast estates out here on the North Shore of Long Island. And they are having a bee happy hour. And there will be a landscape horticulturist doing some talk and taking some walks around the garden. They'll also be discussing backyard beekeeping and conservation. The beer is being sponsored by Greenport Harbor Brewing Company, and it should be also fun. And it's only $30, so you can go to Old Westbury Gardens website and get tickets there. On June 16th, Poisoning Paradise is a documentary that has come out, and there will be a screening at the Soho Film Festival on June 16th. And there's a discussion following it. So if you're interested in that, it's at the Village East Cinema on 2nd Avenue. Also on Saturday evening at the Port Jefferson Chamber of Commerce Annual Green Fest. Actually, it's Saturday during the day, 1 to 5. And that's always a fun day. They close down the town, and just walking and friendly and kid-friendly and animal-friendly. I take it back. No pets. Not animal-friendly. Kid-friendly. So check that out. June 19th, Slow Food North Shore, which is the slow food chapter that I have run for the past 8 or 9 years. I've lost track of the time. And I've stepped down. They are having a spring soiree at a wonderful restaurant, Osteria Liana, in Oyster Bay. And it starts at 7 o'clock. There's a few tickets left. It's almost sold out. It's a small restaurant, so it's going to be a family-styled, plant-forward, but I think there's a little seafood, but mostly vegetarian event. And tickets are $60. It includes beer and wine, and should be great. So, like I said, there's a few tickets left if you're interested in that. June 23rd, Wade into the Bronx River from the river's mouth, and this is working with the historical connection to the Bronx River, and the artist in residence, Paloma McGregor of Angela's Pulse, will do a performance ritual that embodies stories and spirit of the Bronx River. Sounds great. It's $20. It's at Starlight Park in the Bronx. On June 26th, there's a literary luncheon up at the Inn at Pound Ridge. And Chloe of vegan chef Chloe Cascarelli and Neil Harden will be talking about their books, and Chloe Flavor will be there selling her new book, and also the chef Neil Harden from ABCV will be cooking a vegan lunch. So that's on June 26th up at Pound Ridge, the inn at Pound Ridge. June 29th, Organic Matters, the NOFA Farm to Table Dinner, is taking place in Locust Grove. That's up in Poughkeepsie. And their farm to table events are always something you want to be at if you can. I want to tell you about a workshop that is taking place with Vice President Al Gore for the Climate Reality Leadership Corps. It's not until the end of August, August 28th to the 30th, but you need to apply by July 1st. So if you're interested in becoming a climate reality leader, they need leaders, and they have trained thousands of people already to help fight for climate change. So if you're interested in participating in that, it's taking place in L.A., and they are looking for applications now. So check that out. Another screening of Pesticides in Paradise will be taking place on July 11th. And space is limited there, so you need to RSVP. You can find out more information about it on my website. But that's going to be in New York City from 6 to 8 on Wednesday, July 11th. And it's also showing on July 12th at the Community Food Funders, also in New York. And both of these, you can lunch will be served actually on the second one for free, so July 12th. But just Google Pesticides in Paradise. You can find out more information about it, and I also have links on my website. July 14th, 15th, Slow Food Nations is taking place in Denver, Colorado. They're closing down the city and having food festivals all throughout the city. I went last year. It was really quite an event. So if you're interested in the slow food movement and networking with others and just having a great time eating your way through the weekend, that's where you want to be. On July 14th, there's also a farm-to-table dinner to benefit the Sylvia Center. That's at Kachke Farms up in Kinderhook, New York. And they will be joining me the beginning of July on this show to talk about the Sylvia Center and the work they're doing there. July 12th, there's a summer nights up at Stone Barns. And there's actually three Thursday nights in a row up at Stone Barns where they have women speakers, and it should be, you know, you can go up early and eat at the Stone Barns Cafe, which has some really great food. And the first night, the speaker will be Anna Lappe, who's been a guest on my show, and she works for the Small Planet Institute. I was one of the founders of it, and she's great. She's going to be focusing on women and how they're working at the intersection of climate change and agriculture. So that should be a really great evening. Another one, the one after that, is on July 19th, and Anna Chai and Nari Kai are Emmy Award-winning directors and producers of the film Food Waste, and they'll be, or actually film on food waste. The film was called Wasted, the Story of Food Waste. And they'll be speaking up at Stone Barns on July 19th. And then the last one on July 26th is Marcia DeLange, who is a senior scientist and an agroecologist in the Food and Environmental Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. And so that will be on the 26th. All of them are great. I have a lot more events listed on my website, but I don't want to take the time to go into those. So check out the events at my website. If you don't receive my weekly newsletter, you can sign up for that as well, where I send a newsletter out and it lists all of the events every week. And I spend a lot of time scanning the internet and going through my emails and finding all the great events that are going on in the New York and surrounding area. So if you actually have an event coming up and you'd like me to share that, please send that to me too. And now I'm so excited to share with you this week's recipe. I was going to an event at my synagogue, and they are a nut-free environment, but they always ask me to make something vegan and gluten-free because they know that that's what I do. And so many of my Vegan and gluten-free desserts tend to have like a nut crust or something like that. So this I made a banana chocolate and raspberry mousse with a chocolate drizzle on top, and I served them in clear cups so that I could put each layer in separately so that you could see the three different layers with the drizzle on top, and it just looks so beautiful. So there's a banana filling, a chocolate filling, a raspberry filling, and then the chocolate drizzle. So I'm going to give you the ingredients for each one separately. And basically the ingredients are you take those ingredients, and you're just going to process them in the food processor until they're smooth, and then pour them into the cups, and then do the next layer and the next layer. So I did the chocolate layer first. I used 1 cake of silken tofu that I pressed. You know, for all the tofu, I opened them up first, drained the water out, and pressed them between 2 dish towels just to remove some of the excess water. So I put 1 of the cakes of tofu into the food processor along with 1/2 cup of coconut milk, 1 teaspoon vanilla, 1/4 cup of coconut oil, 3/4 cup of maple syrup, and 1 1/2 cups of cacao powder. Cacao powder is just less processed cocoa powder, but if you prefer to use cocoa powder, it will work with that as well. And just process that until it's really smooth. Stop midway, you know, take a spatula and scrape down the sides, and then process some more until it's really smooth. And then you're going to fill, I filled 20 clear plastic 5-ounce cups. So I did, you know, a little bit, like, you know, 3/4 of an inch or so on the bottom of the chocolate. Then I did the banana filling, which was 1 cake of the silken tofu. I used 3 bananas, depending on the size. I guess it would be 2 to 3 bananas, 1/4 cup of maple syrup, 1/4 cup of coconut oil, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. And again, process that, scrape down the sides, process it more, and then put that into the cups. And then the last one was the raspberry filling. And I used 1 12-ounce package of frozen organic raspberries, 1 cake of silken tofu, 1/4 cup of raspberry liqueur, and I use Chambord, but you can use whatever kind of raspberry liqueur you have. But it just gave it that more sophisticated flavor, and it was really great. 1/4 cup of maple syrup, 1/4 cup of coconut oil, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, and 1 pinch of salt. And I processed that and then made a layer. That was the top layer in the cups. And then the chocolate drizzle was 1/2 cup of raw cacao powder, 1/2 cup of maple syrup, 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, and 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla. And I just mixed that up together and then drizzled it. I put it into a little plastic squeeze bottle and squeezed the drizzle right on top and then put them in the refrigerator and refrigerate them for at least 2 hours. If you can refrigerate them a little longer, that's even better. And then serve them. And they were really great. They were a hit of the party. Everyone loved them, and they're just so beautiful. So enjoy those. Of course, if you're not making it for an event where you're taking it out and you have some beautiful parfait glass cups, you can put it into that, and it would, you know, just up the ante a little bit. So it is now my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest for this week, Patrick O'Neill. He is the founder and CEO of Amp Your Good, and Amp Your Good is a founding partner of the Give Healthy movement. And Pat has been working in the private sector for many years, from real estate into energy, technology, and social enterprise. He founded, co-founded, and led several companies before founding Amp Your Good, and has served on the board of directors for both profit, nonprofit, public, and private companies. His mission-driven work began at his local church while growing up, continued while he was at West Point, while he was in the Army, and various other nonprofit organizations during his career, both also coaching sports and mentoring. And Amp Your Good is his latest endeavor, and it's brought together his passion for disruptive technology, health, and for making a difference in the lives of others. Pat, are you with me?
I sure am. How are you doing, Bonnie?
Good. I'm so glad to have you back on. You joined us back when you first were working with FoodX and just getting started. And it's just been wonderful to watch you over the years really grow this business into a really changing a changing movement in the food pantry and food drive world. So it's been really wonderful to watch and watch your success, Pat. It's great.
Oh, well, thanks. Thanks so much.
Sure. So for those that don't know about AmpriGood, can you first just give them a little background about your company?
Yeah, sure. So the idea behind AmpriGood in a very general sense was thinking about the various ways that we all can give to help other people. As you know, we all have some choices to make there. We can donate money to support a particular cause. We can volunteer our time, or we can donate things. And AmpriGood was founded really thinking about the things that we all donate to help other people. A lot of those things that we donate to various kinds of drives that are usually sponsored by organizations or communities that we're connected to. So that can be donating food to food drives or blankets to blanket drives. And the core problem that we were trying to address in thinking about that kind of giving is that at a general level, there's a pretty big mismatch between what people donate and what's actually needed by the organization that's going to receive that donation to serve their mission. And so in the case of food drives, for instance, and donating food to food drives remains one of the most popular forms of giving in our country, which is great. It's unfortunate that we're in a situation where so many people need help and are struggling with food insecurity. That's sort of a whole nother discussion. But it turns out that a lot of the food that people donate, typically non-perishable foodstuffs, cans and boxes of things, is not really what food pantries and food banks and soup kitchens are looking for, principally because oftentimes what people are donating to traditional food drives tend to be less expensive, less nutritious kinds of food. And these days, hunger relief organizations are really working hard to ensure that the kind of food that they're distributing to those in need is healthy food. So that's really kind of the mismatch there. And so we developed a platform that organizations can use to conduct food drives to ensure that what people are donating matches what that food pantry or that food bank that's being supported by the drive really actually needs. And so we started working on that. We launched our platform, as you inferred, a few years ago. I guess 3 years ago at this point. And since then, happily for us, it's been very exciting for us to be growing very quickly as more and more organizations recognize the importance of trying to ensure that food donations match what's actually needed.
So how'd you come up with the idea?
It's sort of a two-part equation. I grew up in a restaurant family. My mother and father owned a pub-style restaurant in a rural area, sort of in northwest New Jersey. And they had six O'Neill kids. We all worked in the pub growing up, doing all the different jobs you can do in a workplace like that. And because it was a rural area, and really this is sort of how my parents thought about things, we doubled as the informal soup kitchen. And so we were growing up, we were just in the habit of helping our parents make an extra meal for people who typically were struggling with temporary circumstances, but basically people in need. And so growing up, I learned one way you can help other people is with food. And more recently, sort of the second part of the story has to do with my kids. We have four children, and they're all through their middle school years by this point. But middle school is the middle school in our town had a food drive every year. And middle school, I think for most people, that's where you first took your health class. And typically one of the modules in health class is a nutrition module. where the kids are taught, foods that they should eat more of, foods that they should eat less of, pretty basic stuff. And the school in our town would send kids home with a list, two lists actually, of both of those things. Eat more of this, eat less of that. Uh-huh. And when the annual food drive came around, they'd bring home a list also, which was the list of food to bring in for the food drive. And it was a much closer match to the foods that the kids were being taught not to eat or to eat less of. Right. And as a parent, that really frustrated me. And so it was that sort of combination of things that led me to think about there sort of has to be a better mousetrap, and ultimately led to what we developed with Amp Your Good.
Uh-huh. Well, that's great. Well, now, my question is, most food drives, people do it, the organizations that are running it are nonprofit organizations or religious organizations. How does Amp Your Good make money? I know you're not a nonprofit. You're a for-profit business.
Sure.
How does that work?
Yeah, so it's really pretty simple. When a group wants to use our platform to conduct a food drive, we set up a web page with information about their drive, and you can think of it very similar to crowdfunding. So there's a food drive page. It tells people who you are as the organization that's sponsoring the drive, why you're doing the drive, and who you're supporting. And then when the organizers of that drive reach out to their community, and that can be a school community or a faith-based community, it could be a civic organization, companies use our platform. Instead of asking people to bring canned goods to a collection box, they're asked to visit the webpage with information about the drive. And the donation process is picking out food items that are presented for donation. So you hit a donate button, and that takes you to what we refer to as the store page or the donation store page. And typically on that page, there are 6 to 12 food items that are available for purchase. And so the donation process is actually a shopping experience where you pick out the food that you want to donate to the drive. You pay for that food through a standard e-commerce checkout process. And then after the drive is over, we deliver all the food that drive has had donated to it directly to that food pantry or food bank that the drive is supporting. Now, when mm-hmm. people are shopping, it's an online shopping experience where they're purchasing that food from us for the same price they would pay if they drove to the supermarket to buy food to bring to the traditional food drive collection box. Mm-hmm. So they're making an online purchase, and then we're sourcing that food at a lower cost from wholesalers that we work with that provide the food that we're going to deliver to the food bank or the food pantry.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And so you have connections around the country to do this? So you, because I know you say you deliver it, so you have organizations or people you work with in all the different states that can do this, or is this limited to certain
yeah.
states that you're working in?
No, we operate across the country. And for instance, in the New York area, our principal supplier is a company called Baldor's. And Baldor's is a supplier to restaurants. They supply Whole Foods and other supermarkets. So for us, they are both our supplier, and they make the deliveries of the food to the food pantries and food banks that are supported with these drives. And I should mention, Vondi, that I don't think I've mentioned this yet. So one of the key differences between our system and a traditional food drive, besides the fact that the donation process is happening online, is that we're able to provide people the ability to do something that they literally can't do with traditional food drives, and that is that they can donate fresh fruits and vegetables, which is mm-hmm. something that all hunger organizations are looking for more of these days. And for those of your listeners who are familiar with Baldor's, they're really a high-quality fresh produce supplier to all those organizations that I named.
Yeah, they actually supply a lot of organic as well, no?
They do, and we work with them. We've had groups conduct organic produce drives. We've had groups conduct drives that are designed to raise locally grown produce, and Baldor really helps us with that.
Mm-hmm. So you can choose that. You can choose local, seasonal, and organic if you so desire, right? And how do you find there's a big price differential between, let's say, you know, organic? Well, we know how it is in the supermarket, but when you're buying it wholesale, how is it for, you know, the difference between supplying organic?
Yeah, there are. I think there are the similar differences that you would see in the supermarket. I think our view on it is that we want to empower people to help in sort of the optimal ways. And optimal is both it's sort of a combination of what hunger relief organizations are looking for, but from a donor perspective, what they understand would be a great way to help. So, you know, I grew up with making these, helping my parents make extra meals. And one of the lessons that my parents drilled into all their kids was that when you're helping somebody with food, as we were, you don't think of it as, well, let's help them if we have something left over. It was really, if we're going to help them, we're going to make more, and they're going to get the same meal that we would serve ourselves. And
right.
So I think that, you know, if you're someone who is eating or trying to eat only organic food yourself, because that's how you really want to treat your own body, why wouldn't you want to help somebody in the same way that you would treat yourself? So
right.
I think that...
And I always say it's not only helping your own self with organic, but you're supporting the farmers that are doing the right thing for the planet.
Well, certainly. I mean, there's... I think what you touch on is something that we think about a lot. So we think about how can you enable people to support perhaps a number of causes in one act that they're conducting. And so it's great for anybody that wants to support those who are struggling with food insecurity with a food donation. If they have the opportunity to do that and support other causes they believe in, so donating something, donating organic food stuff, organic produce, has these other benefits that accompany it. And what we think we see, I mean, we collect a lot of data. It looks to us like when you provide people with the opportunity to support more than one cause with a single act, they tend to be more engaged with that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And do you find that most of the food drives you're doing are supplying food pantries so that, let's say you're donating potatoes, everybody gets a 5-pound bag of potatoes, or are you more donating, you know, a 50-pound box to a food soup kitchen that where they're then going to cook the food? And so is it more going to pantries or is it more going to soup kitchens?
I think so far we see it more supporting food pantries and food banks. I think in general, those kinds of organizations historically tend to have more food drives that support them. You know, one of the organizations we do quite a bit of work with is the West Side Campaign Against Hunger. And you know, they, like many hunger relief organizations, have really upped their game over the past several years in terms of improving the nutritional quality of the foodstuffs that they make available to those that they serve. And mm-hmm. and so they have had, you know, a pretty active roster of schools and businesses and other kinds of organizations, faith-based organizations, that have historically supported them with food drives. And what we're seeing is that you know, there's a migration of some of those groups that have been doing traditional food drives to conducting Give Healthy drives, or what we now call Give Healthy drives, so that people can donate fresh produce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Pat, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I would love you to tell us about the Give Healthy movement that you're involved with. So
sure.
Everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Pat O'Neill from Amp Your Good, and you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and we'll be right back.
The Progressive Radio Network is a thinking person's network for our world's progressive visionaries and stakeholders and great thinkers to assemble on a commercial-free and listener-supported network. Our provocative hosts speak freely and passionately on intriguing and urgent topics such as health and news and politics and women's issues and philosophy and more that directly impact our lives. Progressive Radio Network takes chances. Our voices and ideas are not always welcomed by corporate media. So Progressive Radio Network is a very important outlet for these great thinkers.
Hi, this is John Lobel. You can hear my show Visionaries at 10 a.m. on Mondays on PRN. And guess what? PRN now has its own app. So you've always been able to listen to our shows by going to your web browser and putting in prn.fm, and then you can listen to the current show that's on air. But you can now download onto your smartphone, Android and iPhone, our PRN browser. Search for it in your app store, and you can listen live to whatever's on at the moment. So download now our PRN.fm app.
Stay tuned to PRN.fm for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hi, this is Mike Fader. I'm here live on PRN every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. My show, The Turning Point, is a blend of autobiographical storytelling, political and cultural commentary, and lively, intelligent interviews. I hear you asking, Mike, how can I stay sane in the age of Trump? No problem. Just listen to my show. It's all natural, gluten-free, and just plain good radio. That's Mike Fader with The Turning Point every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on PRN.fm.
I wish I could say.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and my guest today is Patrick O'Neill from Amp Your Good. And right before the break, we started to talk about Give Healthy Movement, the Give Healthy Movement, and he's going to share with us what that's about. Patrick, you with me?
I sure am.
Great. So tell us, what is the Give Healthy Movement? This is new because it was not a part of our discussion the last time. So tell me.
Yeah, you're right. Well, it's a movement that just celebrated its first anniversary, so it is really new. And it's really a movement designed to do a couple of things. It's designed to be another voice to add to a number of voices out there that are trying to heighten public awareness that hunger in our country is a health issue. You know, the 40 to 45 million people who are food insecure as a population set suffer from really high rates of diet-related health issues, obesity, diabetes, cancer, and the list goes on and on. And while there are several contributing factors to that, the principal driver of that is a poor diet. And the principal driver of the poor diet is really a simple lack of access to healthy food. So whether that's coming from people who are living in, whether you refer to them as food deserts or food swamps, or in the case of people who are relying on hunger relief organizations, their access to the kind of foods that we all should be eating lots of is just much, much less than everybody else's. And I mentioned earlier that hunger relief organizations are really working hard and frankly have done a great job in the past couple of years of increasing the quality of the food that they distribute. There's a lot more work in that area for them to do. And part of that then is really making the public aware that there is this deep-rooted connection for everybody, but particularly for those struggling with food insecurity, that that hunger is a health issue. So we hope to help increase public awareness of that. The other goal of the movement is, and this is where Amp Your Good comes into play, is that there are around 100 million people that will donate at least one food item to a food drive each year. And so you have 100 million people who are choosing to support hunger as a cause with the food donation, and probably in other ways as well, with monetary donations, with volunteer time. But if you take a step back, and this is what the formation of the movement prompted discussions around the idea of, well, can we change the donation behavior of a lot of these people so that the food donations that they're making are really the optimal kinds of foods that hunger organizations are looking for? And so the movement itself, outside of its goals, is really a collaboration of a wide variety of organizations and people that recognize the importance of the two goals, heightened public awareness that hunger is a health issue, and the goal of changing donation behavior of all these people that like to support hunger with food donations. So I would say the most prominent kinds of organizations involved are either hunger relief organizations, and those can be food distribution organizations like food banks, like food pantries, or organizations that are doing advocacy work or policy work or research work. So that's one set of organizations. The other are really come to it more from the health focus side, so various kinds of public health organizations. And what we've been able to do in a fairly short period of time since we launched is really build a great roster of organizations who have terrific standing in this kind of work, really wide reach to help get the message out. And just a couple of examples. On the hunger relief organization side, we work with Feeding America and Share Our Strength, the Food Trust, Why Hunger, right in New York City. In fact, Why Hunger is one of the co-founding partners of the Give Healthy movement. On the health side, Johns Hopkins University, something called the True Initiative, which is a consortium of medical professionals who really focus on the connection between diet and health. Another of our founding partners is Ashley Koff Approved. She's a registered dietitian. We actually have quite a bit of involvement from the nutrition and dietetic professions. And bringing together this collaboration of organizations has been exciting to see happen. And we're really helping to move the dial on this whole dialogue of how we should be thinking about hunger and what for those of us who are choosing to support hunger with food donations, what we really should be donating.
Wow, it's so exciting, you know, because in years past, for me to participate in, you know, our food drive, and as I'm sure you're aware, you know, most synagogues during the high holidays of Yom Kippur, when people are fasting, that's when they traditionally do their food drives. And so like every temple, you know, around does a big food drive during Yom Kippur, and it's always shelf stable because that's what it had to always be in the past. And I would actually have to go shopping for it. You know, I'd have to go I'd buy canned beans or whatever, but I didn't just have stuff. I didn't have stuff that I would usually have around that I would donate, because that's not the stuff that I usually eat. Although canned beans I will, you know, but anyway.
Sure.
It's just so nice to think that you can really donate, and that, you know, people can come through and get fresh broccoli and fresh, you know, potatoes and onions and carrots and, you know, the things that, as you said, we know are healthy, and those are the things that we are encouraging our kids to eat. And, it's great, because I have, you know, seen what they normally set, you know, offer at the food pantries, and even where the food pantries now where they give you your choice, you know, where you can kind of go through and kind of go shopping and pick what you want. It's still, you're picking shelf-stable stuff, which is not the food that we're all encouraged to eat. So,
it's really true. It, you know, and it also dovetails with another big trend, of course, and that is that more and more people are buying groceries for themselves online and having them delivered, you know, to their home, or maybe there's a pickup point that they go. And we think, and I think people that are focused on what's happening in terms of online activity and online food activity, you know, I think anybody who's really into the space, so to speak, recognizes that as we move into the years ahead, people will most likely be increasing the amount of foodstuffs that they purchase online. In fact, we had a number of people provide us with feedback that they're appreciative that there's a way for them to participate in a food drive where they do purchase the food online, because they don't even go to supermarkets themselves anymore, because they buy all their food online and it gets delivered to them. So the idea of supporting a traditional food drive actually means a sort of an extra trip to a place they no longer go to buy the food, to bring it to a collection box someplace. And certainly part of what we think helps with all this is the convenience aspect of it. One of the things that we point to is that the average food donation to a Give Healthy drive runs in the 20 to 25 pound worth of food range, which, you know, if you think about that at a practical level, that amount of food might fit into two or three bags of groceries. And what we see is that the typical donation that somebody might make to a traditional food drive usually is maybe up to one bag of groceries, or maybe something less, but it's really defined by what somebody can conveniently carry to a collection box from,
right,
you know, from their car, or, you know, however I'm getting to my place of worship on the weekends. And you very rarely see people, you know, carrying two or three bags of groceries to a collection box. So we sort of free people up to donate as much as they want to, not being limited by how much they can carry. And of course, you know, the hunger relief organizations that are getting the food, they're just seeing a lot more food being raised in these food drives, and it all matches what they really want. So it's a great win for them in a couple of ways.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when people donate online, do they choose a monetary amount, I guess, you know, depending on how many bags of this or that you give? And then is there a surcharge or anything like that, like a processing fee that people have extra, or is it just really the cost of the food?
It's really just the cost of the food. I mean, you know, and this gets into, you know, so we're selling, as you know, if you go to 10 different supermarkets to shop for a certain something, you're going to see a price spread for those items. You know, that item might be on sale at one supermarket, but if it's not on sale anyplace, you know, you may be buying something for $4.99 at this supermarket, and $6 at this one, and $3.50 at this one. So the pricing tends to be pretty variable. But our perspective is we want to present healthy food items that people can purchase for a price that they would typically see at the supermarket. And for the same price that they're spending at the supermarket, we include the cost of delivery. There's no extra processing fee. And what they're literally doing is they're purchasing that food. They are purchasing it from us, much as they might purchase something from Fresh Direct or other online food supermarkets, but instead of it getting delivered to their house, it's getting delivered to some other place, in this case a food pantry or a food bank.
Mm-hmm. And so is there a difference in getting involved in the Give Healthy movement versus Amp Your Good? Like, if you know, are they the same, the food drives?
The whole process is the same. So the Give Healthy movement, and we've essentially, from an Amp Your Good perspective, because our platform supports other kinds of drives for other types of charitable causes, we've really, by becoming a co-founding partner of the Give Healthy movement, we've really rebranded what we do with food drives as Give Healthy Drives. And so It's our platform that's being used. But if one goes to givehealthy.org, which is the website for the movement, there's a lot of great information there about, you know, the case that we make for why it's important to donate healthy food. Many of our partners and collaborators and ambassadors, there's information about them on the site. And that's where you start if you want to organize a Give Healthy drive. There's a registration process to get your drive set up at givehealthy.org.
Okay, so it's better to go to givehealthy.org as opposed to Amp Your Good.
It is. That's the way that we now tell people. If you want to do a Give Healthy food drive, visit givehealthy.org, and it's pretty intuitive in terms of how to let us know you'd like to do a Give Healthy food drive and get all set up for that.
Uh-huh. Just out of curiosity, what other kind of drives do you do?
Well, one of the really exciting, I'll call it a project that we're working on, is something called Stop the Bleed. And Stop the Bleed is primarily sponsored by the American College of Surgeons, another organization called Stop the Bleeding Coalition. And it's a national effort to both train citizens on how to help stop bleeding loss from somebody who's traumatically bleeding, whether that's from a car accident or a mass shooting or other reasons why somebody, you know, if left unattended, would literally bleed to death. And it turns out that if bystanders help somebody who's traumatically bleeding with some fairly simple life-saving methods, and then you can think about this in the context of like a CPR, you can really save somebody's life by doing some simple things, which you would do until the first responders came to, you know, and the professionals came to really help somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really good data on how many people's lives can be saved if just, you know, lay people knew what to do. So how we're involved in this campaign.
Yeah, I was reading about that in Las Vegas. I think there were a lot of people were saved because of bystanders who helped, as opposed to the authorities couldn't get there right away. So,
yeah, and that's exactly what the aim of this campaign is designed to do. So, unlike CPR, which is something you know if you're trained how to do that, it doesn't require any equipment. If you're going to stop on someone who's experienced traumatic bleeding, if they're bleeding from a limb, you would apply a tourniquet. And if they're bleeding from their torso or their head, you can't use a tourniquet. There are essentially pads or gauzes that you would use. And so there needs to be equipment available. The Stop the Bleed campaign is both focused on training. I mean, their ambition is to train over 100 million people over the next, 5, 6, 7 years. In these basic life-saving techniques, but also to deploy what's called bleeding control kits. And you can think about these as sort of large pocketbook-sized kits that have a tourniquet in them. They have a product called Quick Clot, which is what's used by the military in battlefield situations to save soldiers' lives, and a few other things that would be in the same places that you would find AED devices on the wall in public buildings or next to a fire extinguisher.
Mm-hmm.
So those kits cost money, and a lot of communities don't have public budget monies available to pay for those things. So our platform is used by school groups, other types of civic organizations that they do kit drives. And so they raise bleeding control kits instead of, let's say, food for a food drive. And that's our involvement with that. And I have to say, it's really exciting to be involved in that because the people who we've come into contact with are really super energized with the idea that they can really be doing something that can potentially help save somebody's life. And you can imagine, we've in the aftermath of the Parkland shooting down in Florida, we've been in touch with many school communities that want to make sure that if the if the worst happens in their school environment, you know, with some type of a mass shooting, that there's at least an ability for the people that are there, teachers, administrators, even other students, if you're, you know, let's say thinking about a high school, that can help save people's lives in that kind of a mass shooting.
Wow. Well, I'm glad I asked you that last question, because that's good information for people to know, even though it's so sad that we have to think like that in this day and age, but we do. So, well, Pat, I'm so thrilled at the work you're doing. It's all good stuff. Anything coming up that you want to share before we're just about out of time? So anything coming up that you want to share with people?
Sure. Well, we have some great activities planned for this fall in connection with World Food Day and some other exciting things in terms of Give Healthy that we'll be announcing over the summer, getting ready for the fall. And if it's very easy to keep in touch with what's happening with the Give Healthy movement. Just go to givehealthy.org. You can sign up for updates if you care to and otherwise learn about what we're doing. And for anybody who's interested in Stop the Bleed, just Google Stop the Bleed, and you'll see some links that pop up in the top of the search results that will get you, you know, at least initial information about the work that we're doing there.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Patrick. And everybody out there who joined us today, thank you for listening. And check out Amp Your Good, Stop the Bleed, and the Give Healthy movement. And make your food drives healthy for those that are in need this year. Thanks, everyone, for joining me, and I'll see you all again next week.